Due to the extreme nature of this program, listener discretion is advised. The subject matters may include topics of substance usage, sex, historical events that may be sensitive to some listeners, and foul language. Things discussed may not be considered politically correct in this overly sensitive environment. They may not be appropriate for listeners under the age of 13. As well as some listeners may find things offensive no matter the age, again, listener discretion is advised.
Greetings and salutations, and welcome to the next episode of GXO, Generation Extraordinary, the podcast nobody asked for. Focusing on everything that's relevant to the greatest generation alive today, Generation X. So if it involves movies, music, TV, and a bit of history from 1960 through 1999, we're going to talk about it. Who knows? You might just learn something before it's all said and done. And if you're lucky, this grouchy old fart might just regale you with a story or two. I'm Robert Pop, coming to you from beautiful Podunk, Nebraska.
Are you looking for a used car? Well, come on down to Hillbilly Willie's Used Car Emporium. We got the widest selection of low-quality, high-mileage cars and affordable in-house financing. Bad credit, slow credit, no credit, no problem. If you got a job and enough money down, you can drive away today. All our vehicles have Willie's famous 30-30 warranty on it and a taillight protection plan. You can drive away with a smile. That's Hillbilly Willie's Used Car Emporium, located on Highway 6, just next to the burnout Conoco station. Come on down today. Your new car is waiting for you. And so am I.
Willie's famous 30-30 warranty isn't famous at all. All cars essentially are sold as is. The warranty stipulates 30 seconds or 30 feet, whichever comes first.
The views and opinions expressed are just that, Rob's views and opinions. He is not always politically correct, and they may not match up with your own opinions. It is not his intentions to offend anyone. Hopefully you find the shows entertaining and informative as well. Please note, Rob is not a professional historian, but he has done a lot of research for this show. With that being said, mistakes happen, but he will do his best to minimize those. Keep in mind, Rob is just some nut with a microphone.
Greetings and salutations, and welcome to this week's episode of GXO, Generation Extraordinary, the podcast nobody asked for. This week, jumping that old time machine, we're going to go back to the year 1978. Today we're going to talk about probably one of my favorite primetime soap operas, and that's Dallas. So, in 1978, the world leaders at the time, the late Jimmy Carter, he just recently passed away not too long ago, James Callaghan, he was prime minister until 79, and then, of course, Leonid Brezhnev. Fuck, it was like we never got away from that guy. Top headlines, world news, Air India, B-747 exploded near Bombay, killing 213 people. Electrical workers accidentally discover the Aztec Templo Mayor, or High Temple, two blocks from Mexico City's central square, the Zocalo. That's interesting. Carl Willenda, German acrobat of the Flying Luendas, dies after falling in a tightrope accident between two hotels in San Juan, Puerto Rico, at the age of 73. Fuck, this guy was still trying to walk a tightrope? Oh, my God. I mean, I'm nowhere, well, I can't say I'm nowhere near 73, but I've got a little ways to go, and I don't trust walking on a fucking sidewalk, much less a tightrope. Wow. Korean Airlines Boeing 707, fired on by Soviets, crashed in Russia. 43 people die as two express trains collide head-on south of Bologna, Italy. Gunman shoots his way into Iraqi embassy in Paris. That gunman that was occupying the embassy surrendered and released 8 hostages. As the gunman is led away, the Iraqi guards open fire, wounding him and killing a police officer. Police officers return fire, killing one Iraqi and wounding 3 others. That's kind of fucked up. Yeah, they're out. The cops got them. Open fire. funeral of Pope Paul VI is held in Vatican. 422 people die in an arson fire in a movie theater in Iran. And Pope John Paul I is officially installed as the 263rd Supreme Pontiff. This year was tough on popes for us, because then 1 month later, funeral services are held for Pope John Paul I, and I'm not even going to try and pronounce Polish Cardinal Karol last name. I just can't. I'm going to butcher it if I try. And he's elected Pope John Paul II, later to be known to us Catholics as Saint Pope John Paul II. Ayatollah Khomeini calls for an uprising in the Iranian army. Big surprise there. That guy was a putz. USSR and Vietnam sign peace and friendship treaty. Wow. Iranian troopers fire on an anti-Shah student protesters by a Tehran university. I remember this, that was the reason why Ayatollah was an assaholah, and because he was anti-Shah, and the Shah had to run for his life, and, you know, of course, the United States, we had to get involved, so, yeah, shit's always going down over there. Speaking of the assaholah, Khomeini's followers attack a British embassy in Iran. The Shah of Iran, I'm not even going to try to pronounce that. Let's see if I can do it. Shah of Iran, Mohammad Reza Pahlavi? Don't know. Places the country over military rule, allowing General Azahir to form a government. OPEC raises oil prices by 18% and agrees on a 14.5% petroleum price increase for 1979 to be implemented quarterly. It's kind of shocking to me that they actually would have called it petroleum, because what they were doing to the world by increasing prices on it at that time, really just kind of went in dry. Here in the United States, top U.S. headlines, Harvey Milk becomes the first openly gay person elected to public office in California. That was in San Francisco. The puke Roman Polanski, he skipped bail in the U.S. and flees to France after pleading guilty to charges of engaging in sex, with a 13-year-old girl. You know, I would have loved Chris Hansen to be able to just go up and interview this fucker. This has played out so many times in my head. The first micro on a chip, or microchip, is patented by Texas Instruments. Hustler publisher Larry Flint and his lawyer shot by a militant white supremacist sniper in Georgia, leaving Flint crippled and wheelchair-bound for the rest of his days. Georges de Mistral's patent for velvet-type material expired, putting Velcro on the open market. So there we go. Sunday, as in solar sun day, events are held in the United States. President Jimmy Carter deferred the production of the neutron bomb. Garfield, that crazy wacky cat created by Jim Davis, appeared in his first comic strip. Neo-Nazis call off plans to march on a Jewish community in Skokie, Illinois. You really don't think of the Skokie, Illinois as being a hotspot for the Jewish people. Guess it was. And by the way, to quote the great late John Belushi, I hate Illinois Nazis. Former U.S. President Richard Nixon makes his first public speech since resigning in 1974. The Ford Motor Company chairman, Henry Ford II, fired, now here's a name that we all remember from back in the day, former company president Lee Iacocca, who then jumped ship and, well, no, he couldn't jump ship because he was fired, went over to the Chrysler Company and gave us such wonderful cars, such as the Aries K car and the Daytona, and we really can't forget the Dodge Colt. Price of gold tops out at $200 an ounce for the first time. Anwar Sadat, Menachem Begin, and Jimmy Carter, those are three names that are fun to say. Same with me. Anwar Sadat, Menachem Begin, that's a great one, Menachem Begin, and Jimmy Carter begin the Egypt-Israel Peace Conference at Camp David. A week later, they signed the Camp David Accord, which gave the framework for peace in the Middle East between Egypt and Israel. And, you know, that's there's a lot of people out there that don't think President Carter did anything during his... He was actually quite a diplomat. I'm not going to say he was a great president. I'm going to say he's a great man who was the president at a very tough time. Hopefully that makes sense. PSA, Boeing 727 and a Cessna private plane collide over San Diego and 144 people die. United States President Jimmy Carter signs a bill restoring citizenship to the Civil War-era Confederacy President Jefferson Davis. San Francisco Mayor George Moscone and Supervisor newly elected Harvey Milk are assassinated by a former supervisor, Dan White, at City Hall. Dan had some issues. United States President Jimmy Carter more than doubles the national park system size. That's one of the things that I liked about his presidency. H.R. Haldeman, Nixon's White House chief of staff, is released from jail after serving 18 months. In sports, Leon Spinks beat Muhammad Ali in 15 rounds for the heavyweight boxing title. New York Yankee manager Billy Martin and Reggie Jackson fight in the dugout after Jackson refuses to bunt, causing Martin to suspend him. I believe it was the next day or the day after, Billy Martin resigns as Yankee manager after, quote, "One is a born liar and one other is a convicted one," commented about Steinbrenner and Jackson. Johnny Bench, he hit his 300th career home run. On Old Timers Day, New York Yankees announced that Billy Martin will return as the New York Yankee manager in 1980, and Bob Lemon will become GM. See, that's what I said here two or three times ago. It was like this back and forth between Billy Martin, who was a total douche, and Yogi Berra. And I think Yogi, he couldn't get any respect because everybody just kept saying, boo-boo. So, and then Leon Spinks, after he put the hurt on Muhammad Ali comes back and beats him in 15 rounds to regain the heavyweight boxing title. In weather, blizzard forms in the United States Northeast. 100 people are killed through New England and New York over 3 days. They got 54 inches. I remember the blizzard of 78. Used to slide off the roof. I mean, sled off the roof of our house because we had the north wall, and as that was blowing up there and drifting, it drifted all the way up to the roof. And yeah. Me and my sister, being the hillbillies that we are, we got out the ladder and started going up and down. A lot of fun. A 7.4 magnitude earthquake strikes near Tabas, central Iran, killing an estimated 15,000 to 25,000 people. In the world of entertainment, United States Supreme Court rules 5-4 that the FCC had the right to reprimand New York radio station WBAI for broadcasting George Carlin's filthy words. Laugh in Judy Carn, she was arrested at Gatwick Airport for drug possession. Keith Richards, believe it or not, he was convicted of heroin possession in Toronto that year. In the weird and wacky headline, Charlie Chaplin's coffin and remains are stolen from a Swiss cemetery in an extortion plot. Pay attention to this, Harley. World's strongest dog, a 175-pound St. Bernard, pulled a load about 6,400 pounds, about, 90 feet, thereabouts. And in White Plains, New York, a large man walked into a bank, approached a teller, and demanded money. The teller, assuming a robbery, handed him a bundle of notes, and then another when he demanded again. At which point, the man jumped in the air and yelled, "Wee!" After he danced a bit, he just blurted out, "When I need money, I know where to come," and exited the bank without any money. The man was later picked up and held for psychiatric observation. That's fucking great. On the crime beat, it was a very active year. Ted Bundy killed Florida State co-eds Lisa Levy and Margaret Bowman. Escaped mass murderer Ted Bundy was recaptured in Pensacola, Florida. David Berkowitz, he was sentenced in New York Supreme Court to 25 years to life. Franklin Bradshaw is murdered in Salt Lake City by his grandson, Mark Schroeder, at the instigation of his mother, Frances Schroeder. Sid Vicious, charged with the murder of his girlfriend, Nancy Spungen. While incarcerated, Sid attempted suicide while at Rikers Detention Center. Leo J. Ryan, American politician, and four others are killed in Jonestown, Guyana, by members of the People's Temple, followed by a ritual mass suicide of 914 members. 918 members are either murdered or commit suicides. We had an additional four that could have been murdered under the leader of Jim Jones. And here's a bad, nobody really talks about the real victim in that. And that's Kool-Aid. You know, it got a lot of stigma that, hey, we're going to, drink the Kool-Aid. It wasn't Kool-Aid. It was Flavor-Aid. Jonesy couldn't even fucking pop for the good 5 cents a packet Kool-Aid. Instead, he went with the 2 cent Flavor-Aid. What flavor was it? I don't remember. I think it was a grape. Six masked men bound 10 employees at Lufthansa cargo area at New York City's Kennedy Airport and made off with over $5.8 million in cash and jewelry. All of the participants and some associates were either later killed on the order of the alleged hard air quotes there, organized crime mastermind. The loot was never recovered. And I told you, this was a busy year. In Des Plaines, Illinois. See, I always like around here, I always call it Des Moines. But this would be Des Plaines, Illinois. Or Des Plaines, Des Plaines, Illinois. Anyway, John Wayne Gacy was arrested for murder. Notable deaths that year. Former Vice President Hubert Humphrey, he passed away. Will Gear, that was Grandpa on the Waltons. Arthur Breaux, He played Mr. Granger on Are You Being Served? We did cover that one. Bob Crane of Hogan's Heroes, he was murdered at the age of 49. But he was into some weird shit, too. I mean, it was like he was, it was like an asphyxiation, gay, porn, drug-induced something that was going on in like the, I don't know, a fucking Motel 6 or some shit. I really don't remember. But I do know that anybody that heard about that was shocked. John D. Rockefeller III, he passed away. Louis Prima, he passed away. He was King Louie in The Jungle Book. Keith Moon of The Who, he died. Jack Warner of the Warner Brothers, he died. Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, he died at 1975. He died at 75 years old. Now, I have mentioned this before. Edgar Bergen, horrible, horrible ventriloquist. I mean, I could do a better job. But, great salesman. How do you pitch a ventriloquist act for radio? I mean, that's just, wow. Anyway, he passed away. Mother Maybelle Carter, she passed away. Norman Rockwell passed away. Golda Meir, she passed away. And Ed Wood, if you don't know much about Ed Wood, that is a weird fucking story, so check that out. He had something to do with Bela Lugosi and I tried to watch the movie, Ed Wood. God, it was just all over the place, which I think is kind of the way he was in life. In the music store, top five songs in the U.S. on the pop charts. Staying Alive by the Bee Gees. Shadow Dancing by Andy Gibb. Night Fever by the Bee Gees. How Deep Is Your Love by the Bee Gees. And Love Is Thicker Than Water by Andy Gibb. I just think that's cool that the entire family had the top five. Top five songs on the R&B chart. September, Love That Song by Earth, Wind, and Fire. Shake Your Groove Thing by The Peaches and Herb. Everyone's a Winner by Hot Chocolate. Got to Be Real by Cheryl Lynn. And I'm Every Woman by Chaka Khan. And the top five songs on the country chart. Living on Tulsa Time by Don Williams. The Gambler by Kenny Rogers. Give Me Back My Blues by the great one and only Mr. Jerry Reed. Every Which Way But Loose by Eddie Rabbit. And Burgers and Fries by Charlie Pride. Saw him in concert. Saw Don Williams in concert. Saw Jerry Reed more than once in concert. Yeah, those were all really good concerts. On the One Hit Wonder chart, Take This Job and Shove It. And here it is almost 50 years later, and we all are still singing this. And honestly, who can't relate? Thank God It's Friday. That was a short-lived disco song by Love and Kisses, and honestly, yeah, I kind of go along with that one too. This unknown act at the time sang a little song about King Tut. His name was Steve Martin. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of him. Hot Child in the City by Nick Glider. And Magnet and Steel by Walter Egan. In the movie theater, we had some good ones and we had some bad ones. So let's run through these. 1978 saw Halloween for the first time. What are we up to now? 86, 87, something like that. I don't know. Jamie Lee Curtis still looks pretty darn good for being 107. The Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Superman. Oh, we all miss our original Superman. I can't say that there hasn't been some guys playing Superman since Chris Reeves, but honestly, as a Gen Xer, who do you think of when you think of Superman? The Buddy Holly Story. That was before, what's-his-face lost his mind. I can't think of it. Same time next year, Grease, because it was the word. Coma, oh, one of the worst movies ever, and unfortunately it has two of my favorite stars in it. Annie Potts and a guy by the name of Mark Hamill, but it was not Ghostbusters or anything that had to do with the Jedi. It was this piece of shit called Corvette Summer. God, that movie sucked so bad. Dawn of the Dead, Animal House, Hey, What Am I Now? Fills his mouth with potatoes. A Zit. Up in Smoke, Every Which Way But Loose. Hooper, that was a Burt Reynolds film. Heaven Can Wait, Jaws 2, Return from Witch Mountain, The Fury, Convoy, gave birth to a really good song. Damien, Omen Part 2, Harper Valley PTA, Highballin', Thank God It's Friday, the movie, The Cat from Outer Space. I actually like that movie. There's a lot of those early Disney ones that I didn't care for, but I like that one. The End, that was another Burt Reynolds movie. The Revenge of the Pink Panther, Piranha, that was a horrible B-movie that they redid it like in, I don't know, early 2000s, and it was even worse when they redid it. Oh, my God. Yeah. Debbie Does Dallas, that was in the theater. Maybe not in your local theater, but it was in a theater. Death on the Nile, The Drunken Master, that had Jackie Chan in it. Rescue from Gilligan's Island, Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. I Spit on Your Grave, by the way, that is a great movie, and I got to say, this is where the remake was better than the original. And Ice Castles. On TV, we had the options of watching these on the three channels. 2020, that came out that year. Our New Downs. The all-new Popeye Hour. Battle of the Planets. Battlestar Galactica. Card Sharks, Challenge of the Super Friends, that was on. Crazy Legs Crane, Centennial, the miniseries. I just went back and tried to rewatch this. It wasn't bad. As an adult, it wasn't bad. Oh, Mr. Partridge is trying to be an undercover man. David Cassidy, Man Undercover. We saw Different Strokes. What you talking about, Willis? We saw Flying High, that had the beautiful Connie Selica, who later went on to play Pam on The Greatest American Hero. Go, Go, Globetrotters, that was a cartoon superhero that if they all touched the magic basketball, they turned into these crime fighters. The Hanna-Barbera Happy Hour, The Harvey Korman Show, The Hee-Haw Honeys. Yes, thank you, ladies. That's all I have to say. You're always going to be ladies in my mind. The Incredible Hulk was out. Jeopardy. The Croft Superstar Hour. Crofts were still trying to milk it. It was it was a creepy, weird show that was drug-induced. Kids are people, too. Mary. I believe that was trying to get Mary Tyler Moore up and going again. Mork and Mindy, Nanu, Nanu, with the great Robin Williams and the beautiful Pam Dauber. The Paper Chase, that was a great movie and a great TV series. Taxi, that debuted. The Ted Knight Show, that debuted. Twiggy's Jukebox, can't say I ever remember seeing that. Vegas, one of the greatest TV shows ever produced. WKRP in Cincinnati. And, of course, our topic for today is when the TV show Dallas came to town. So stick around after these words from some of my fake sponsors.
Nobody enjoys changing a shitty diaper, but you can't ignore it. The flies get too thick and usually CPS gets involved, so make the most of it. Tender Tush Wipes by Sledgehammer. Unlike the wet wipes that have traditionally been the size of a postage stamp and smelled like baby powder, Tender Tush are the size of a shop towel, guaranteed to remove all the poop rather than getting it on your hands. And they have a neutralizing agent to counteract the foulest of baby shit and leaves baby clean and smooth. The first wipe designed with both you and baby in mind. Tender Tush by Sledgehammer. That's how good this shit is.
All right, welcome back from that break. I did want to mention to you guys that if you're trying to go back through and listen to any of my old episodes, there has been an issue with one on Spotify, and it's my Prince episode, that it has been taken down because of somebody complained it for infringement on copyrighted material, even though I do have my disclaimer that says, hey, I don't own these, and I'm just using them for entertainment purposes only, and it's through my paid YouTube subscription. But anyway, rather than fighting it and causing a big stink, they wanted to pull it down, so you know what, that's fine. All right, with that being said, I got a lot to cover here with Dallas, so bear with me, this one might get a little long. So Dallas debuted, by the way, before I start with what the show is, the reason it's a thing to me is when my parents would sneak out of town, they would drop me and my sister off at my grandparents, and we would sit there, and usually it was Friday night, because, you know, they would say they were going for groceries and shit, they may be gone clear up until midnight, so, you know, they were probably doing some he-ing and she-ing, but nonetheless, anyway, we would watch with my grandparents Dallas on Friday night, so that's the reason why it's got some fond memories for me. So anyways, for the show itself debuted on April 2nd, 1978 as a five-part miniseries on CBS. Although the miniseries was created as the series pilot, by the time it aired, neither the producers nor the network were hopeful that it would go much beyond those first five episodes, so they had no plans to expand it. It was shown in a late Sunday night time slot, known for low ratings. However, the miniseries proved popular enough to be turned into a regular series and broadcast for a full 13 seasons, all the way up until May 3rd, 1991. The five pilot episodes, originally considered a miniseries, are now referred to as Season 1, making 14 seasons in total. The show is known for its portrayal of wealth, sex, intrigue, conflict, and power struggles, just to name a half a dozen. Barbara Bel Geddes, she starred as the family matriarch, Miss Ellie, whose family were the original owners of the ranch South Fork. Jim Davis as her husband, Jock Ewing, the founder of Ewing Oil and the head of the Ewing family. Patrick Duffy as their youngest son, Bobby. Victoria Principal as Pamela Barnes Ewing, the daughter of the rival Barnes family who Bobby brings home as his wife in the pilot episode. Ken Kirchevel as Pam's brother, Cliff Barnes, and JR's rival. Steve Canale as Pam's ex-boyfriend, Ray Krebs, and he's also a South Fork ranch hand who would later turn out to be Jock's illegitimate son. Larry Hagman is J.R. Ewing, the oldest son, who strongly objects to his new sister-in-law. Linda Gray as Sue Ellen, J.R.'s long-suffering alcoholic wife. Charlene Tilton as Lucy. This is Bobby's, J.R.'s, and later on Ray's teenage niece, who absolutely adores Bobby. And Ray, but resents JR for disposing of her parents in order for her to be raised by, quote, true Ewings. Throughout the series, the main premise is a long-time rival between the Ewing and the Barnes' families, which came to a head when Barnes' daughter Pamela eloped with Ewing's son Bobby. The backstory was that in the 1930s, wildcatter John Ross, Jock Ewing, had allegedly cheated his one-time partner, Willard Digger Barnes, out of his share of the company, Ewing Oil, and married Digger's only love, Eleanor, Miss Ellie Southworth. In contrast to Jock, Miss Ellie came from a long line of ranchers with a great love for the land and cattle, following their marriage, the Southworth family ranch, Southfork, became the Ewings' home, where Jock and Miss Ellie raised three sons, J.R., Bobby, both of those I've mentioned, and Gary. J.R., unscrupulous and unhappily married to a former Miss Texas beauty queen, Sue Ellen Shepherd, was frequently at odds with Bobby, his youngest brother, who had the morals and integrity that J.R. lacked. Middle son Gary was Miss Ellie's favorite, as he displayed Southworth traits. However, Gary had been in conflict with both Jock and J.R. since childhood and was dismissed as a weak link. At the age of 17, Gary secretly met and married 15-year-old waitress Valene Clements, producing saucy and petite Lucy, before returning to South Fork with the intention of settling down. Although Jock warmed up to Valene and supported Gary's fledgling family, J.R. pressured Gary into alcoholism and by landing him with bad business deals that caused him to flee South Fork, entered a spinoff of Knott's Landing. I think it was a couple years later. With Gary gone, J.R. persecuted Valene until she left the ranch and the state, leaving Lucy to be raised by her grandparents. During the first episodes of the series, teenage Lucy is seen sleeping with ranch foreman Ray Krebs. Let me just comment here. Ew. I mean, ew. Later on in season 4, Ray was revealed to be Lucy's uncle and illegitimate son of Jock through an extramarital affair during World War II. Ew. Blah. No. Wherein Ray becomes half-brother to J.R., Gary, and Bobby, and noting his resemblance to Jock. Ray had been previously engaged in a short fling with Pamela, but she fell deeply in love with Bobby, and the pilot episode begins with the two of them arriving at South Fork Ranch as newlyweds, shocking the entire family. J.R., who loathed the Barnes family, was not happy with Pam living at South Fork and consistently tried to undermine her marriage to Bobby. Meanwhile, Pam's brother Cliff, who inherited Digger's hatred for the Ewings, shared J.R.'s objections to the marriage and continued his father's quest to get revenge. Okay, so that's the bones of the entirety of the soap opera. Now, one thing that Dallas was notable for was cliffhangers. Throughout the series, every season ended with some sort of cliffhanging episode to drive ratings up for the season premiere later that year. So, in season 1, pilot season, saw J.R. up to the loft in the barn to talk to Pam, who had gone up there to find her cousin Jimmy after Digger had fallen off the wagon at the Ewing barbecue. J.R., intoxicated, tries to convince her to tell Bobby not to leave the ranch. However, she does not want to be bothered, and in trying to escape J.R., she falls from the loft, landing square on her stomach. Pam, who was pregnant, miscarried her unborn child. Later, Sue Ellen questioned J.R. as to whether or not it was an accident, or if he meant for Pam to fall on purpose. J.R. says, "I did not." When Sue Ellen asks J.R. if he cares whether Pam lost the baby, J.R. doesn't answer her one way or another. In season 2, the cliffhanger Sue Ellen's drinking problem has landed her in a sanitarium where she is pregnant with a child she thinks is Cliff's. She escapes from the sanitarium, gets drunk, and then gets into a severe car accident, putting hers and the baby's life in danger. The doctors deliver the baby, naming him John Ross Ewing III, but he is very small on delivery and is just not out of the woods yet. Nor is Sue Ellen. As the episode ends, both of them clinging to life. A distraught JR is watching his wife at the end of the episode in tears, saying that she just gotta live. Season 3 cliffhanger, JR has made so many people in Texas hate him with a passion. Men that he's cheated in business, women that he's cheated in relationships, family members he's angered, and Marilee Stone, whose husband committed suicide after a particularly disastrous business deal with JR. After all of this, somebody waits outside JR's Ewing office late one night, and when JR hears a noise, goes to the door and asks, "Who is it?" Where somebody shoots him twice in the abdomen. The cliffhanger to this episode leads to the now famous "Who shot JR?" And debates and speculations seem to swarm everywhere. And it's a speculation of whether or not JR would actually survive or be killed off. In season 4, cliffhanger there was Sue Ellen tries to sneak her son, John Ross, off of South Fork, but is caught by JR, who banishes her from the ranch. Pam later intercedes, taking John Ross to his mother while JR is away, throwing JR into a rage. Kristen returns, demanding more money from JR, who tells her it's not too late to prosecute her for shooting him. While headed to a late-night business meeting with Bobby, Cliff finds a brunette's woman's body floating in the South Fork pool. He jumps into the pool to see who it is, and when he looks back up, JR is standing there on the balcony overlooking the pool. Believing JR is responsible, Cliff says to his rival, "She's dead, you bastard." The face of the body was never shown, leading to speculation of whether it was Sue Ellen, Pam, Kristen, who was Sue Ellen's sister, or someone else. This, by the way, this was the show's highest-rated season-ending episode. In season 5, Susan Howard joined the main cast as Donna Culver Krebs, politician and widow of former Texas governor who becomes Ray's first wife and mother to his daughter Margaret. Jock Ewing was the first main character to depart the series. Not on choice, because Jim Davis died that year. So, of course, they had to write it to where Jock died off-screen in a mysterious helicopter crash in South America just after production had completed on season 4 in 1981. The cliffhanger for that year was earlier in the season, Cliff had JR facing a financial mess when JR's plan to blackmail the Farlows into handing over John Rush and stockpiling 5 million barrels of the Farlows crude oil backfired on JR when the market price of crude starts to plummet. In order to stockpile the Farlows crude oil, JR had taken out a $200 million loan and used $50 million worth of Ewing assets as collateral. Cliff, along with the cartel of Jordan Lee, Andy Bradley, and Wade Luce, then they worked with Vaughn Leland in order to buy the notes owed by JR as they planned to foreclose. With Cliff seemingly putting one over on JR, Miss Ellie, very last minute, bailed Ewing Oil out of this mess by agreeing to a deal with Clayton, that Clayton would pay the price that he would have paid at the time that the oil was stockpiled. By the season's end, JR and Cliff's situation had turned sharply into the opposite direction, as Sue Ellen, whom Cliff had had a off-again, on-again relationship, decided to return to JR, planning to marry him again. In addition, JR had set a trap for Cliff by making sure that a fake geological report would convince Cliff to invest millions of dollars in buying property on oil-rich lands, which was actually bone dry. Cliff was then fired by his mother, Rebecca Barnes Wentworth, running Wentworth Tool and Die, due to Cliff's embezzlement of company funds. Cliff then attempts suicide with an overdose of pills, and a guilt-ridden Sue Ellen rushes to be bedside as Cliff lays in a coma. J.R. tries to convince Sue Ellen that it was nobody's fault but Cliff's for what happened. But Sue Ellen disagrees, and she says she does not know if she can ever remarry J.R. if Cliff dies. Cliff's life hangs in the balance as the season ends. Barbara Bel Geddes in Season 6 had had a quadruple heart bypass on March 15, 1983, just days after filming her last scenes on Season 6. Bel Geddes then missed the first 11 episodes of Season 7, but she had a period of rest and recuperation following the surgery. After Season 7's finale, Bel Geddes left Dallas entirely after disagreements about her workload and salary period during her surgery. The cliffhanger was, early in the season, Sue Ellen gets drunk after having seen J.R. in bed with Holly Harwood. She gets into a car, and Ray Krebs' cousin, Mickey Trotter, tries to stop her, and they are involved in an accident in the car belonging to J.R. just outside South Fork. Sue Ellen emerges with nothing worse than bruises, but Mickey is paralyzed from the neck down and in a coma. In the final episode of the season, Ray finds out the driver of the other car was Walt Driscoll, who had helped J.R. in a previous scheme. He also learns that Driscoll deliberately caused the accident, thinking that J.R. was driving, and as a means of revenge by being put in jail by J.R. earlier that year. An angered Ray comes to South Fork late one night, demanding answers from J.R., who was not expecting to see him. J.R. asks what's going on, and Ray says he's going to kill him for what happened. J.R. throws a candle holder at Ray, which misses him, and knocks over another candle holder with lit candles. As the two brawl, the candles ignite a fire, and the smoke starts to creep into both John Ross's and Sue Ellen's bedrooms as they slept. Sue Ellen has been given a sedative by the doctor earlier in the day, so she doesn't wake up. J.R. notices the fire and tries to break free of Ray, finally knocking him out with a telephone, and runs upstairs to try and save his wife and son. Ray recovers and runs after J.R., but is consumed by smoke and falls. J.R. is hit with a falling beam as he gets upstairs, and both men are unconscious as South Fork burns. Season 7, the cliffhanger was remnants of the Season 3 cliffhanger as a mysterious figure enters Ewing Oil Building late one night. Proceeding to JR's office, the figure produces a gun and fires three shots into the back of JR's chair, in which somebody is sitting. As the victim falls out of the chair, we see that it was Bobby who was shot. Ah, fuck. Season 8 saw Howard Keel as Clayton Farlow. He became a regular as a wealthy, occasionally hot-tempered rancher and Miss Ellie's husband following Jock's death. We also saw Bobby's teenage sweetheart, Jenna Wade, played by Priscilla Presley, who gives birth to Bobby's only biological child, Lucas, and eventually becomes Ray's second wife. Donna Reed also joined the main cast during Season 8, temporarily portraying Miss Ellie until Barbara Bel Geddes returned in the following year. The cliffhanger: Bobby, who has been divorced from Pam now for over a year, is engaged to Jenna Wade and decides he wants to remarry Pam. And Pam agrees. The next morning, after a little mount down now, Bobby is leaving Pam's house when someone drives a car at high speed towards Pam. Bobby shoves her out of the way just before she is hit, but cannot get out of the way himself. to save his life. We see that it is Catherine who was driving the car, and that she was also killed when her car crashed after running over Bobby. Bobby is rushed to the hospital, where he later dies. With Pam, Jenna, JR, Miss Ellie, Clayton, Ray, and Donna at his bedside. Season 9. Now, I will say, Season 9 was kind of a fucked up season. And you'll find out here after a bit. So, the role of Miss Ellie had been recast in Season 8 for Donna Reed. And Donna Reed signed a 3-year contract. But Barbara Bel Geddes was then asked to return for the start of Season 9. A request in which Bel Geddes agreed, resulting in a high-profile public relations debacle that left Donna Reed infuriated and in litigation with series producers, who eventually made a $1 million out-of-court settlement to Donna Reed. Unfortunately, Donna didn't get any time to spend that dough because she died unexpectedly of pancreatic cancer a few months later. Man, I'll tell you what, that pancreatic cancer, you just don't come back from that. Miss Ellie remained on the show until near the end of Season 13 when she and Clayton left Dallas, deciding to travel around the Far East Asia, eventually settling in Europe near Ray and Jenna. Following her exit from Dallas in 1990, Barbara Bel Geddes retired from acting altogether. Cliffhanger for that year, evil businesswoman Angelica Nero intends to kill JR and his cousin Jack for double-crossing her, but JR has her apprehended by the police. Unfortunately, Angelica has already placed a bomb under Jack's car, which explodes with Jamie inside. After hearing this on the phone, JR runs out of his office to go to Jack's apartment. As he leaves the office, Sue Ellen arrives in the other elevator looking for him. As soon as she enters JR's office, another bomb goes off that Angelica had put up there, and the entire floor that houses Ewing Oil explodes, showering debris onto the street below. The scene then shifts to Pam in bed the day after her marriage to Mark Grayson. Pam wakes up to hear the shower running. Assuming that it's Mark, she opens the shower door, only to find Bobby, alive and well. This was the fucked up season, and it was revealed that the entirety of Season 9 was a dream of Pam's, the dream season. Yeah, that one really, yeah, that was kind of a fucked up cliffhanger, to be honest with you. Season 10 saw Bobby Ewing's death in the Season 8 finale, alongside his subsequent absence during the following season, was explained away at the beginning of 10, having been dreamed by Pamela, thus erasing everything that happened during Season 9. Patrick Duffy had left the series to pursue other opportunities, but due to declining ratings, he was then convinced to return to the series by the production team of Lorimar, as well as his friend and co-star, Larry Hagman. The cliffhanger for that year, Jack Ewing left Dallas to continue his travels and, frankly, to get away from JR. Midway through the Season 10, and he returned for a final time for the 2 episodes towards the end of the season. Ray and Donna divorced at the end of Season 10, moving to Washington, D.C., where she later married Senator Andrew Dowling, with whom she raised Ray's daughter, Margaret. Jack's ex-wife, April Stevens Ewing, played by Sherry Wilson, by the way, if you recognize that name, she was the hotness that was in Walker, Texas Ranger. She first appeared during Seasons 10 and 11. Originally a scheming character, April eventually became Bobby's second wife after his divorce to Pam. The Ewings suffered a devastating loss as Ewing Oil is closed down by the U.S. Justice Department as a punishment for J.R. Sheedy's dealings, which caused an international incident. Pam, on her way home to Bobby from the doctor's office after finding out that she can finally conceive a baby, crashes into a fuel tanker, which then explodes. Well, that fucking sucks. The cliffhanger was Pamela was severely burned after driving a car into an oil tanker, which then exploded into flames. I never noticed whether or not it was a Ewing oil tanker, which would have just been the cherry on top of that sundae. In season 10 finale in 1987, during season 11, Pam disappeared after her half-sister Catherine was seen around the hospital, with Pam seemingly leaving Bobby and Christopher due to her unwillingness to let them see her in such a physical disfigured state. Having undergone plastic surgery, which explained the difference in her appearance, it was revealed that Pam was dying of a disease that she and her doctor only knew about this. After this episode, Pam was never seen again. J.R. and Nicholas Pierce, Sue Ellen's new boyfriend, fight in J.R.'s penthouse hotel suite. The fight ends up with both of them on the balcony, and Pierce falls over the balcony to his death. Shocked for what she had just seen, Sue Ellen then picks up a gun from the floor and shoots J.R. 3 times. She then picks up the phone, tells the police that she would like to report a double murder. In season 12, Lucy Ewing, who had left with husband Mitch at the end of season 8, returned to South Fork in the final episodes of season 11, only to leave again for Europe 2 years later. As season 11 ended, Ray sold his ranch to Carter McKay and left Dallas for Switzerland with Jenna and Lucas, Charlie having already moved there to attend a finishing school. Ray returned for 5 episodes in the early period of season 12. The cliffhanger for that year, Sue Ellen prepares to leave Dallas for good, but with a final surprise for JR, with the help of her new boyfriend Don Lockwood, Sue Ellen has made a biographical motion picture about her marriages to J.R., which actors portraying them and the other Ewings, and previews the film to him, leaving him shocked and horrified. Sue Ellen then tells J.R. she's leaving Dallas, and if he ever crosses her again in the future, or if she wakes up on the wrong side of the bed one morning, she will release the film and J.R. will be made the laughingstock of Texas before finally and triumphantly leaving. Season 13, Sue Ellen left in season 12 finale, moving to London with her new husband, film director Don Lockwood, while Linda Gray was let go by the same budget cuts that ended Steve Canale's run on the show. Sue Ellen's exit has since been described by Gray as a mutual decision by her and Leonard Katzman, agreeing that the character had come more than full circle. The cliffhanger for season 13 was Carter McKay, who buys Ray's ranch and eventually becomes the head of Ewing Oil's rival, Westar. The young and naive Callie Harper Ewing, J.R.'s second wife, whom he married to escape false rape charges, J.R.'s illegitimate firstborn son, James Beaumont, April's devious sister, Michelle Stevens, who marries both James and Cliff Barnes. Yeah, it got weirder. After deliberately committing himself into a sanitarium in order to persuade Clayton's sister, Jessica, to sign over her voting majorities in Westar, J.R.'s plan backfires when Callie and James coerce him into signing a property waiver before they will allow him to be released. Once he does this, James tears up J.R.'s release papers, leaving him trapped in the sanitarium with no means of escape. And finally, in season 14, fans of the show I Dream of Jeannie were delighted to see Barbara Eden show up as Leanne Dallavega. I know I was happy to see her. Clayton Farlow made 4 appearances, clearing up business that included deeding South Fork to Bobby. April Stevens Ewing, she died early on in the season, kidnapped on her honeymoon by Hillary Taylor. Kelly Harper Ewing left midway through the season to build a new life with new boyfriend and her and JR's newborn son. Liz Adams broke her engagement to Cliff and left near the end of the season, and James Beaumont left the show a couple of episodes prior to the series finale to start a new life on the East Coast with his newly discovered toddler Jimmy and Jimmy's mom, Deborah Lynn Neutron. Jimmy Neutron, see, get it? Never mind. The cliffhanger for that year, as the series concluded, Carter McKay stayed put at Westar, as powerful as ever. Michelle Stevens was left heartbroken and humiliated, alone in the ranch that she had bought from McKay, hoping to live there with James. Cliff Barnes was once and for all the sole owner of Ewing Oil, and Bobby, now the owner of South Fork, was finally able to find closure after April's death. After finally losing Ewing Oil to Cliff Barnes, control of South Fork to Bobby, and being abandoned by his wives and children, a drunk and despondent J.R. begins walking around the ranch alone with a loaded gun, wishing he had never been born. A gunshot is later fired in J.R.'s bedroom as Bobby is returning to South Fork. He rushes up to J.R.'s room and gasps by saying, "Oh my God." There was a prequel story, and there were some made-for-TV movies that, to be honest with you, they just didn't have any fucking legs. The prequel story, the early years, that was intended to show was like with Jock and Miss Ellie and Digger. The TV movies that were made, JR Returns in 96, which resolved the series finale cliffhanger, and the 20th anniversary movie, Dallas, War of the Ewings in 98. There was a new series that premiered in 2012, focusing primarily on John Ross and Christopher Ewing, now grown sons of J.R. and Bobby. Larry Hagman and Patrick Duffy, as well as Linda Gray, returned in the full capacity, reprising their original roles. It does not take the events of the 90s TV movies, J.R. Returns or Dallas, The War of the Ewings, as canon. Instead, we find the characters 20 years after the events of the series finale, Cliffhanger, in season 14. In the show's second season, J.R. Ewing was killed off following the death of Larry Hagman in November 2012 with another whodunit storyline. Throughout the remainder of the season, various cast members from the original series attended his on-screen funeral. Despite initially strong numbers, the ratings of the new Dallas declined over three seasons that the show ran before TNT canceled it. Dallas has become a real part of our pop culture. JR's hat, his cowboy hat, a foremost symbol of the show's inherent Americanness, is currently held at the Smithsonian National Institute. I have seen this. It's very cool, by the way, because I also got to see Archie Bunker's chair and Farrah Fawcett's bathing suit and the original Kermit. So, yeah, it was really cool. Another part of pop culture is Hank Williams Jr. had a hit song with "This Ain't Dallas," comparing his wife's and his life together, that of J.R. and Sue Ellen. And not many people realize this or remember it, but there was also a J.R. Ewing's private stock beer by Pabst Brewing Company. I want to thank you guys for joining me on this trip through Dallas and 1978, and next time we get together, I think we're going to be talking about the Ghostbusters. So, you guys have yourself a great couple of days, couple of weeks, and I will see you on the other side.
This has been Generation Extraordinary. The views and opinions are Rob's and Rob's alone. Any claims of time travel are purely fictional. The music and audio clips are not Rob's or GXO's, and in most cases were downloaded through his paid YouTube subscription and are only used for entertainment purposes. GXO is a production of Pulpeye Enterprises. Its host, creator, producer, and editor is Robert Popp. Co-producer is Harley Quinn. If you are a fan of the show, please show your support by going on to Spotify and follow us, like and share. It seems like such a small thing to do, but it really does help. For more information, support, suggestions, or to contact us, go to the website www.genxord.com. Thanks for listening.